the little girl
laughs
and laughs.
Hal dreams. Hal, naked and male, sits on the edge of a stage in a nightclub dressed to replicate the throne room of the Wizard of Oz. Hal dreams of Betty and Judy and Marilyn. They've come to tell him the big secret. He's always suspected there was a big secret.
Okay, doll, listen carefully. We're only gonna say this once.
Lost it. Some dream. A good dream. Woke up, sort of. Okay. Retreat back into warm, back into comfort, back into... what? What was in the dream? Judy Garland?
Of course, this isn't my real face, Hal. And this isn't my real face either!
Hal, you'll have to help me. I'm running out of hands.
Ignore the man behind the drapes.
Rose does not sleep.
Go to sleep, Rose Walker. Wind up the day. Let it go.
Hello, Rose? It's Mom.
Put the day away in its place, Rose.
Listen, honey. Unity's had some kind of stroke. She is almost 90. I can't leave her. Not now. Not now.
Forget the weird things that have happened in the last few weeks. You don't need them.
I'm sorry, Miss Walker. Honestly, it could go either way. On one level, it's astounding your brother is still alive, but then he's young. Go home. We'll call you if there's any change.
Forget the man in wolf ears who hurt you, and who wanted to hurt you worse. Forget the pale stranger with eyes like stars. Was he really there at all? When you try to remember him, he seems to fade and shimmer until he seems little more than the echo of a dream. You're tired, Rose. Wrap up the day. Sinking, slowly, downward, and inward. Enter a world where everything's going to be just fine. Unity will be fine. Jed will be fine. You're so tired. Just let it go. Where's Gilbert? Haven't seen him for almost a week now. Not since we got back from Florida with Jed, half-starved and dehydrated and scabbed and... No. Let it go. It'll still be there tomorrow. Gilbert? And sleep. And dream. Gilbert.
Excuse me, sir?
Whom?
Visiting hours are long over.
Indeed. Excuse me, nurse. I am on my way home, just passing to, look in on the young man in that room. Pay my respects. I'm, a friend of the family?
5 minutes.
Why, thank you.
In the dream world, out in the open air, Morpheus, Lord of Dreams, stands high up on a carved outcrop of granite. He broods as he stares out at what appears to be a swirling, slowly turning whirlpool of mist, which is gathering energy and speed as he watches. Beside him is an ornate bird perch, and a large black raven descends to join him.
So it begins once more, the first vortex of this era. Nonetheless, there is something about this one, this time, that I do not understand.
Rock? To be honest, I still don't quite follow what's going on here. What is that thing?
It is the vortex, Matthew. It is also Rose Walker. And it is growing.
So what does that mean, Chief?
It means a number of things, Matthew. But they are not of your concern at this time. Your place is with the boy's mortal body in the hospital. There is someone you must bring to me.
I don't like hospitals.
For my part, I must deal with this vortex as I have dealt with the others in the past. As I must deal with anything that threatens the dreaming.
Ken's dream.
No.
Do it.
Kenny.
Do it.
No.
Barbie's dream.
Oof. This place makes me uneasy, Princess. If the Cuckoo's forces mean to attack us directly, they needs must do it before we reach the brightly shining sea.
I understand.
Caution, Princess Barbara. I sense strangeness in the air.
What manner of thing, Martin Tenbones? The Cuckoo? The Hieromancer? Colonel Knowledge?
None of those. Something is happening, my princess. Listen.
You gotta... just do it. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Chantal dreams.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Not quite a nightmare, but far from comfortable, Chantal is held like a crashed computer in an infinitely regressing loop of story.
It was a dark and stormy night, and the skipper said to the mate,
"Mate, tell me a story."
And this was the story he told. It was a dark and stormy night, and the skipper said to the mate,
"Mate, tell me a story."
And this is the story he told. It was a dark and stormy night. Skipper said, "Story." And this is the story. Dark and stormy night. And stormy. Story.
Zelda dreams.
Chantal wants her to tell her a story, and she says,
"In September of the year 1911, a post chaise drew up before the door of Aswarby Hall in the heart of Lincolnshire. The little boy, who jumped out as soon as it had stopped, looked around him with the keenest curiosity during the short interval between the ringing of the bell and the opening of the hall door."
Hal dreams. He sees Robert again. Not Robert as he proved himself to be, callow, self-centered, dishonest.
Robert.
No, this is the Robert he had hoped for. The Robert he had dreamed of. Friendly, open, magical. Their tune is playing in the background. Rose dreams. She knows she's dreaming. She's never had a dream like this before. Everything seems so real, so vivid, more true and more vital than the waking world. Her sense of identity has never been so certain. She can feel her sleeping body on the bed below her. It's no part of her. The essential her. The true Rose. Falteringly, she extends her perceptions. She sees Hal's house from outside, but with walls and ceilings cut away, as if a doll's house opened up, with all its occupants drifting through their dreams. She can feel them. Chantal, dreaming intricate self-referential loops, trying to reveal nothing of herself to herself. Zelda, still fighting old battles, the little girl lost in the woman whose heart she shares. Barbara's rich dream life.
If the Porpentine is destroyed by the Cuckoo, then the Hierogram will be lost to the world.
More valid and true than anything she feels when waking. Ken's churning world of money and sex and power. Hal's endless quest for identity and love. All of them seeking for a place to belong. All of them seeking a place to be safe. And she sees how simple it all is. Sees how thin and fragile the walls that divide them truly are. Sees how simple it would be to shatter them. She reaches out her mind and nudges. And the walls come tumbling down.
Barbie? Is that you? Where are we?
Ken? How did you manage to get to the place of Lost Carnadine?
The where? What is all this?
It is like a whirlpool of dreams. Not liquid, not solid. Like a thick gas or like ink poured in water, like clouds. Here and there are fragments of faces and images swirling around. Floating in the center of the maelstrom is the sleeping Rose, her hair whipped up and around as if by a high wind. She glows, a being of pure light, almost transparent, her robes trailing away into the darkness beyond the dreams. The other dreamers are caught in the vortex.
Chantal, I'm scared. What's happening to us?
I think we're dreaming, Zelda. I don't know. I'm not sure. Is that Rose?
I suppose so. It's so hard to see.
Ken? Barbie? Hello? Can you hear me? Am I sleeping? Am I dreaming? Are you?
And beyond. She can feel them across the city. A parade of sleeping minds. Each mind creates and inhabits its own world. And each world is but a tiny part of that totality that is the dreaming. And she can touch them. Touch all of them. She begins to free them, loosing them into the flux. Across the city, dreams begin to join and integrate, and in doing, they change the dreamers forever. And Rose, still dreaming, yet never so awake, understands, elated, that this is only the beginning.
There are so many dreamers. So many.
Rose's perceptions extend. So many new things. The brutal, towering dreams of the very young. The fine tracery of lace memories of the very old. And the others. All the others. And it would be so simple to create one huge dream. And then she feels the hands upon her shoulders.
Enough. Enough. Enough!
What happened?
You caused a great deal of damage. Nothing I cannot repair, not at this stage, anyway. I am the lord of this realm, Rosewalker, and I think the time has come for us to talk.
Oh. Oh. Ken wakes, troubled and horny. He presses close to Barbie, is surprised to find that she is awake and that she has been crying.
Honey? What's wrong? Why are you crying?
I don't know.
He says things to her then, in the darkness, that he will later regret. In Chantal and Zelda's room, the two women wake, scared and lonely.
Oh.
No.
They don't talk. They hold each other in the darkness, like sisters, until the dawn.
Oh, shit.
Hal wakes with a feeling of dread in the pit of his stomach. Through the thin wall, he can hear Ken's voice, too low to make out any words. For a while, he sits in the darkened room. Then he takes his flashlight. He walks, as quietly as he can, up the creaky wooden stairs.
Rose? Rose, are you awake? Rose? No.
Rose has gone. And somehow, Hal isn't at all surprised. More than 4,000 miles to the east. It's 4:30 in the morning in the nursing home. Miranda Walker hasn't slept for 2 days now. Her mother, Rose's grandmother, Unity Kincaid, lies quietly in her room. A soft bedside light illuminates her face, framed in the grey hair which is no longer pulled into a bun. Her eyes open a little. Her daughter is watching over her.
Miranda?
It's okay. Everything's okay. I'm here.
The doll's house?
It's still here. It's safe.
I think Rose should have the doll's house. But perhaps she's too old for it.
No. No, I think she'd like that, Mother.
That's good. I wish my parents could be here with me. It wouldn't be so hard. I wouldn't be afraid of dying if they were here. But at least I have you with me, Miranda, and so little time remaining. Stay with me. Makes the letting go easier to bear.
And then Unity is asleep once more. Miranda moves to the window, looking out at the grey dawn, and she thinks,
I didn't need that. I have a son who may be dying 4,000 miles away. I've got a mother who's dying here. What kind of an option is that then, God? If you're out there. If anyone's out there.
It's never been easy. She feels the cold of the glass against her palms. And she thinks,
at least Rose is all right.
This is all so bizarre. But it's just a dream, isn't it?
After a fashion.
I've never had a flying dream before. Say, whoever you are, do you know what Freud said about dreams of flying?
Tell me.
It means you're really dreaming about having sex.
Indeed. Tell me then, what does it mean when you dream about having sex?
Where are we going?
We are already here.
Okay. Some kind of desert. So, what happens here?
It has begun.
Hi, kid. This place really gives me the, heebie-jeebies. Personal reasons, yeah. Yeah. Before I was a raven, I was a human. Government agent, too. Died in a coma in a place just like this. Technically, that's dying in your sleep, kid. Makes you a permanent resident of the dreaming. So now I am a raven. I work for the boss there. I don't know why he wanted me to come here, to be honest. I don't even think you can hear me.
No. I doubt that he can hear you, but I can. Whom?
Oh, why?
I suppose I've been waiting for you, or someone like you. Someone who would come from the dreaming to take me home. I imagined that he would come himself, though. Or send someone I knew. I don't recognize you, little bird.
No. Well, I haven't been doing this for very long. It's all kind of new, but I'm getting used to it, and I think I like being a dream better than I like being a man. Yeah, I did some rotten things near the end. You know how it is. Let's just say I'm glad all that stuff is in the past and in another life.
But that was in another country, and besides, the wench is dead, I see. So, you were once alive, and you have become a dream. I was a dream once, but I left. And truth to tell, I have been rather enjoying being alive. Still, all good things. I shall miss life. I felt that I was getting quite good at it. And I believe I shall miss Rose Walker.
The vortex?
Rose is a vortex? Oh. Oh, dear, I suppose I should have realized.
Yeah, but it's okay. The boss said that he was going to deal with her. He said there'd be lots of other vortices in the past, and he dealt with them as well. So how does he do that?
He terminates their physical existence, little bird! To protect the dreaming. It's the only time he is empowered to take human life. You see, it's one of the rules.
Excuse me?
He's going to have to kill her!
The dreaming.
And I'm a what?
You are a vortex of dream, Rose Walker.
And you're saying that because I'm this vortex, whatever the hell that means, you're gonna kill me. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. That is what I am saying.
You're kidding, aren't you? I mean, you saved my life in that crazy hotel with that crazy fat guy. You saved my life, and now you want to kill me? So it's a joke, yes? No. No, you really aren't joking. You want to kill me. I can't believe it. Yeah, you know, for a second there, I was really worried. But this is just a dream. So what am I worried about? Sooner or later, I'll wake up, then I'll go downstairs and tell Hal about this crazy dream I had, and he'll laugh himself sick. We both will.
Rose, I'm sorry, but you are mistaken. You are right. This is a dream, but not a dream from which you will waken. Not now, not ever. Rose?
No. It's okay. I believe you. I'd be kidding myself if I tried to pretend this wasn't happening. I don't understand it, but I believe it. Just tell me one thing.
What would that be?
Why me?
The Sandman. Lost Hearts.
It all seems unfamiliar. The dreaming has altered in the last 50 years, Matthew.
Yeah? I wouldn't know.
We must hurry, Matthew.
You think you can stop him hurting the girl, is that it?
No, I don't think I can.
Huh? Then why are we doing this? I'd hate to make the chief angry.
I don't think I can, but I can hope, and I can pray. And by the by, I am sure our Lord will be angry enough at me already for deserting the dreaming. Nothing I can do will make it worse.
So, you were a big shot in the dream world in the old days.
A moment, to catch my breath.
Fiddler's Green. Weird name. Who were you?
Who? My dear bird, you seem to be laboring under a misapprehension. Fiddler's Green is not a who. It's a where. I was not a person, Matthew. I was a place. Let us make haste, friend Raven. It is getting colder. We are close to them now.
Once in every era, there is a vortex. Even I do not know why. A mortal who briefly becomes the center of the dreaming. The vortex, by its nature, destroys the barriers between dreaming minds, destroys the ordered chaos of the dreaming, until the myriad dreamers are caught in one huge dream, until all the dreams are one. Then the vortex collapses in upon itself, and then it is gone.
So, the problem goes away.
The vortex takes the minds of the dreamers with it. It damages the dreaming beyond repair. It leaves nothing but darkness. It is one of my functions to prevent this from occurring again.
Again?
It happened. Once, a world was lost. Rosewalker, eons ago, and half a universe away. I failed in my duty. A whole world perished. All of them. It will never happen again.
But if you're, like, the king of this whole place, can't you just... I don't know, magic whatever this out of me? I don't know, just stop it happening?
I am the lord of this realm, and my wishes are paramount. But I am not omnipotent. You are of the living, Rosewalker, and you are a vortex. Only when the vortex is dead is the dreaming safe. Death is not always a bad thing, Rose. You could stay here, in the dreaming. Some mortals are given that option. My raven, Matthew, was once a mortal man.
I don't want to die.
I am sorry, Rose.
Rose Walker, are you up there?
Gilbert!
It is I.
Gilbert, thank God you're here. This man, he says he's going to kill me.
I know, Rose Walker.
Fiddler's Green?
Yes, Lord.
Why did you leave? I relied on you. I trusted you. You were so reliable. You were the heart of the dreaming.
I left because I was curious, and because I was tired. Life as a human contains substance I never dreamed of in the dreaming, Lord. The little victories and the tiny defeats. I had my reasons. But that is of no importance. This girl... Rose Walker. Lord, I offer my life for hers.
Well, that is not an option. The girl must die that the dreaming may survive.
No.
I am sorry.
Unity's bedroom in the nursing home. England. Dawn.
I'm sorry, Miranda. I don't think I've been a very good mother.
Don't think about it, Unity. Mother, everything's going to be just fine.
I think I'm going to have to sleep now.
Unity Kincaid finds it harder and harder to stay alive. Life is so... Unity hears a voice, her own voice, and it whispers to her in the darkness. The voice whispers to her of her life before the long sleep, whispers of childhood dreams of a tall, dark man whose eyes danced like twin stars in her head, whispers the truth. And then she gives in to sleep, her breath shallow and halt, dying in a world she finally understands. Unity dreams.
Hi, Bart.
Matthew, you have brought home Fiddler's Green. You have served me well.
Gilbert?
Yes, Rose.
Listen, isn't there anything we can do to stop him?
No. No, there is nothing he can do. Fiddler's Green, I cannot find it in my heart to punish you for leaving. Not now. However, it is time to take up your appointed position once again.
Say, Miss Walker, take it from me, death isn't that bad. You get used to it. I did. I wasn't having much of a life, mind you.
Say goodbye.
I must apologize to you, Miss Walker. Apologize for not being a very good human being. Not even a very good copy of a human, perhaps I should say. And now, when you need me most, it seems I have failed you.
Just shut up and say goodbye, Gilbert, or I'm going to start crying, and I'm not going to give him that satisfaction.
Farewell, my dear. Let me kiss your hand. You were the best thing about being human. After your death, if you do stay in the dreaming, then visit me. Walk in my meadows and my green glades. Rest beneath my trees.
Immediately, the brutal and craggy landscape to which Dream has brought Rose is transformed into an idyllic meadow ringed by trees and mountains. Flowers blossom all around. Morpheus and Rose stand exactly as they were. Matthew is now perched on a small bush, looking around him in wonder.
So this is Fiddler's Green, huh? Nice place.
Morpheus's cloak is now a coat, which blows open, unbuttoned, over black jeans and black boots. He is bare-chested, as is the tradition of executioners.
I am sorry, Rose. There is nothing personal about this. We all have responsibilities, and this is one of mine. I am sorry.
For Christ's sakes! Look, just do it! Stop apologizing and just do whatever you're gonna do! Okay? Just do it. Stop that!
The voice comes from a young woman wearing a lace nightdress from another age. She looks familiar to Rose. She could almost be Rose's reflection in a looking glass.
Rose isn't going to die tonight. I am. Hello, Rose.
Hello. Do I know you?
Oh. I don't look like this anymore, do I? It's funny the things you forget. I'm your grandmother, Rose. I'm Unity.
Unity?
What a wonderful place this is.
Yeah, it was a friend of mine.
I do not know who you are, but I require you to leave this place. I have business to attend to with this woman.
No. Didn't you hear me? Your business is with me, not her.
Rose is a vortex.
Perhaps. But I should have been the vortex. If you had not been imprisoned away from the dreaming, I would have been.
I do not understand.
Of course you don't. You're obviously not very bright, but I shouldn't let it bother you. Granddaughter, come here. Rose, I once gave you a ring. Now I want you to reach inside yourself and give me whatever it is that makes you the vortex.
Excuse me?
Give me your heart.
My heart.
Rose, I'm dying. You don't have much time. You're dreaming. Anything's possible. Just do it.
Okay.
Rose closes her eyes, lifts her hand, and without effort, pushes it through her ribcage into her own chest.
I can feel it. I've got it.
She withdraws her hand. In it is a heart. Not an organic human heart, but something more like a faceted precious stone. A deep red, glinting in the sunlight.
This.
Thank you, Rose. I'll take it. I am the Vortex now, Dream King. As I should have been so many years ago. I am the Vortex. And
I am...
Unity?
No.
Unity?
What? What happened?
You died. Let me help you up.
Oh, thank you.
I don't understand this. I'm sorry. Are you still gonna kill me?
There is no need, Rose Walker. There is much here that I do not understand. But the Vortex has gone.
Gone?
Leave this place, child. I will bring your brother back from the shores of Dream. He will return to consciousness in the morning. View it as a gift from me to you, Rose. Your family have suffered enough. Goodbye, Rose Walker.
And then she woke up.
Oh. That was 6 months ago. What's happened since?
Rose is sitting in the bedroom of the house she shares with her mother and brother. It's bigger than the bedroom she had in Hal's house, with its own bathroom. Scattered around her are crushed paper coffee cups and a couple of loose CDs, Iggy Pop's The Idiot, and the Cowboy Junkies' The Trinity Session. Rose has more disposable income these days.
I got a letter from Hal the other week. Hal's selling his house, moving out west. Reading between the lines, I think he's met someone, but he didn't actually come out and say it.
The doll's house that once belonged to Unity stands beside her, on the table.
He said that Ken and Barbie split. Ken got himself a new partner, who looks exactly like a younger Barbie, while Barbie's gone sort of seriously weird. Hal didn't give me any details. She's gone to stay with some friends in Manhattan. The Spider Women are buying the house from Hal. He said Zelda actually spoke to him the other day.
The pile of books by the bed has accompanied Rose's withdrawal from the world. The titles, which can be made out at this distance, include Empire of the Senseless, We Have Always Lived in the Castle, Sleeping in Flame, Ghost Stories of an Antiquary, and A Distant Mirror. Notes and bookmarks are stuffed into their pages.
No one's seen Gilbert since. We're living in a big house Mom bought, just outside Seattle, where she grew up. We've got more money than you'd believe. Grandma Unity was richer than anyone I've ever known. Weird, huh? All that money, and she never even had a life. She...
Rose is cutting her hair. The color had pretty much grown out anyway. She's had a packet of dye sitting in the bathroom cabinet for a while now.
I don't go out much. Be honest, Rosalita. Be honest. No one else is ever going to read what you put in your journal. Okay. I haven't been out of my room, except to eat, preferably late at night when Mom and Jed are asleep, since we moved here, months ago. I've been reading, playing records, sometimes just sitting, staring into space. Writing this diary or whatever it is. Thinking. A year ago, my best friend died. Her name was Judy. She was killed, or perhaps she killed herself, in some kind of massacre in a small town diner. Judy phoned me on the day she died. She just split with her girlfriend, Donna, and she was in rough shape. I think about Judy a lot.
She looks up at the newspaper cutting, thumbtacked to her bulletin board. It bears the headline, Six Slain in Diner of Death Riddle. Underneath the grainy photos of Judy Talbot, Betty Munro, Gary Fletcher, Kate Fletcher, Mark Brewer, and Marsh Janowski.
I wish I could talk to Judy about this stuff. Except for Gilbert, she was the smartest person I ever met. But I can't talk to either of them. Not anymore.
Rose pauses, looks again at the board. It bears the worn photograph of a heavily built Englishman with a walrus moustache, wearing a monocle, dressed in tweeds, leaning on his walking stick. It is labelled G.K. Chesterton, 1874 to 1936. He is the spitting image of the person Rose knew as Gilbert.
6 months ago, I had a really weird dream. That was the night that Unity died and Jed got better. If it was true, my dream, and lots of it is sort of hazy, lots of it doesn't seem to make any sense anymore. Although, I'm sure it did at the time. Then nothing makes any sense. If my dream was true, then everything we know, everything we think we know, is a lie. It means the world's about as solid and as reliable as a layer of scum on the top of a well of black water, which goes down forever. And there are things in the depths that I don't even want to think about. No, it means more than that. It means that we're just dolls. We don't have a clue what's really going down. We just kid ourselves that we're in control of our lives while a paper's thickness away. Things that would drive us mad if we thought about them for too long play with us and move us around from room to room and put us away at night when they're tired or bored. In my dream, I could have destroyed everybody in the world. In my dream, Gilbert wasn't even a person. He was a place. In my dream, Grandma Unity gave up her life for me. Dreams are weird and stupid, and they scare me. I haven't slept properly for 6 months now. It's a nice house. Too big, but that suits me. It means I don't have to see other people anymore that I have to. Okay. That's my story. It's even got a happy ending. Jed and Rose and their mother were finally reunited, and they all lived together in a big old house. I've been brooding on that night for too long now. 6 months. And I've decided. My dream, my weird dream, it was just a dream. That's all. Just a dream. And then she woke up. You know, I always hated stories that ended like that. I always felt cheated. 6 months is long enough to feel sorry for yourself, isn't it? You can't feel cheated forever.
Hello, stranger.
Hi, Rose.
Hi.
Your hair looks nice. Real nice.
Yeah, thanks. I was sick of it, the old way.
So, what's the occasion?
I don't know. Rejoining the human race, I suppose. I can't sit up there forever. I thought maybe I'd get some kind of a job. Or maybe do some traveling. Hunt down some old friends.
That's a good idea. We've been worried about you.
Sorry.
I found a fox den in the woods. With cubs. I can show it to you. If you want.
Yeah. I'd like that.
It's this way!
Okay. And then she woke up. I suppose there are worse endings.
Morpheus, the Lord of the Dream Realm, sits in the throne room of his castle. He is wearing his most impressive velvet cloak, black boots, a black leather belt. He has dressed for the occasion. He descends the steps and walks to the distant doorway, which leads to his gallery. This chamber contains emblems of each of Morpheus's siblings in the Endless. The Lord of Dreams walks to stand in front of the silver heart, which represents desire. He picks it up.
Desire, I stand in my gallery and I hold your sigil. Talk to me.
Desire appears on the far wall, as if through a doorway.
Why, sweet dream, this is a surprise. Almost an event, I might say.
Good. I'm coming through.
You are? Oh, but of course. You know you're always welcome in my chambers. It's lovely to see you. Can I get you anything? Anything you desire?
My sibling, I require nothing from you save some answers. I have been thinking about certain events of the last year, and I have arrived at some unpleasant conclusions.
Really?
Unity Kincaid should have been the dream vortex of this era, yet she wasn't. The vortex was instead transmitted along her genetic line to her granddaughter, Rose Walker.
I see.
This is unprecedented in my experience. Someone has been meddling in my affairs, Desire, and this has your stink about it.
Are you accusing me of interfering in another member of the family's domain?
Obviously, that is exactly what I am doing, and I am accusing you of more than that.
Go on.
Desire, who was Rose's grandfather? Who fathered her mother on Sleeping Unity 50 years ago?
Was I that obvious?
No, no. You covered your tracks remarkably well. What did you truly intend, Desire? Was I to take the life of one of our blood, with all that that would entail? Or was it more devious than that?
Does it matter, Big Brother? It didn't work.
Desire? If you were not of my kin...
But I am.
Yes. Yes, you are. Desire, listen to me carefully and remember this. We of the Endless are the servants of the living. We are not their masters. We exist because they know, deep in their hearts, that we exist. When the last living thing has left this universe, then our task will be done. And we do not manipulate them. If anything, they manipulate us. We are their toys. And you, and despair, and even poor delirium, should remember that.
I don't understand.
No, I'm afraid that you don't. Very well. I shall tell you something that you will understand, sister brother. Mess with me or mine again, and I will forget that you are family, Desire. Do you believe yourself strong enough to stand against me? Against death? Against destiny?
No.
Remember that, sibling, the next time you feel inspired to interfere in my affairs. Just remember.
and desire walks the chambers of the fortress of their heart. They walk the threshold, their citadel and their protection. And desire wonders.
What did he mean that we're their toys? Human beings are the creatures of desire. They twist and bend as I require it. If I thought otherwise, I would crack like delirium, or I would abandon my realm like our lost brother. Poor dream. I really got under his skin this time.
And desire smiles and forgets. For desire is a creature of the moment. Desire walks the endless pathways of the threshold, certain that he, or she, or they, is in sole and only control of their destiny. The only inhabitant of the twilight realm of desire. And desire feels nothing like a doll. Nothing like a doll at all.
I don't have any idea.
London, May, 1986. Rick Maddock's study. Book-lined classic.
So, what is it? It smells quite disgusting.
The Rick Maddock. Thin, mid-30s, red hair. Brown leather jacket, jeans. Author of the international cult bestseller, The Cabaret of Dr. Caligari.
It's what you were asking for. It's a bezel.
Felix Garrison, a bespectacled junior doctor, holds out what looks like a large lump of calcified hair covered in slime.
Oh, hang on, I thought these things are like precious stones.
Most of them are. This is a trichinobezel. It's made of hair. I cut it out of a young woman's stomach this afternoon. Lovely long hair she had. Trouble was, she'd been sucking it. Chewing it, swallowing the hairs. Must have been doing it for years. Technically, that's known as Rapunzel syndrome. Anyway, it's a bezel. Mission accomplished.
Oh, that's disgusting. But thanks. What do I owe you, Felix?
Oh, nothing. It would only have been incinerated or popped into a jar for students to stare at. Just don't tell anyone where you got it. But, I was wondering if you'd sign this for me.
Oh, first edition of Cabaret.
They're hard to find.
Oh, no. Sure. No problem. For Felix Garrison, with thanks, Rick Maddock. There you go.
This is great. It's a real thrill for me to, you know, be able to do something for one of my heroes. I love the book. Amazing stuff. So, what do you need the bezel for?
Oh, like you were asking the other day, where do writers get our crazy ideas? It's research, really.
I heard you were writing a sequel to The Cabaret. I'm really excited.
Oh, great. That's the phone. Listen, thanks again for the thing.
Hey, no problem. I know how busy you are. I'll just let myself out.
Bye. Richard Maddock.
Rick, it's Harry. Listen, we have to talk. Your publishers were on to me again today.
Oh, hi, Harry.
Listen, the novel's almost 9 months overdue and they're threatening to cause trouble. You're in breach of contract, Rick. Is it finished yet?
It's nearly finished.
Well, how much have you got to go?
It's almost finished, Harry. You can't rush these things. Just another couple of weeks, maybe. Okay? Listen, I am really busy. I'll get back to you, okay?
Okay.
How much of the novel have I written? Honestly? Nothing. Not a word.
The Sandman.
later, Rick Maddock carries a plastic carrier bag up the King's Road in Chelsea. He turns off into a residential street. He stops in the doorway of a terraced Victorian Gothic monstrosity. Unlike its neighbours, this house has not been converted into apartments. It only has a single entry phone button.
Who is it?
Richard Maddock, to see Erasmus Fry.
Help me straight down.
God, this thing stinks.
Are you alone?
Yes, it's just me. I've got it.
Well, come in, dear boy, come in. I'm not sorry that I'm not dressed for visitors. When you get to my age, you don't give a toss what you look like.
Erasmus Fry wears a tartan dressing gown, trousers, and carpet slippers. He has strong features, a shock of white hair, and a dusting of stubble on his chin. He is, or rather once was, a famous playwright and novelist.
Don't just stand there, come in!
The house is claustrophobic and cramped, crammed with bookcases, old statuary, and furniture. They weave past the obstacles towards Fry's study.
How are you, my boy? Written anything profound and stirring recently?
You know I haven't, Mr. Fry.
No. We'll go into my study, and you can show me my present.
The study is dusty, expensively furnished, and dominated by a large portrait of Erasmus Fry as a young man, which hangs over an empty, cold fireplace. There are two heavy leather armchairs in front of it.
An excuse for a sherry. Take a seat, Maddock.
Thanks.
Cheap stuff, of course. I'm not wasting the good stuff on a little shit like you. Here.
Cheers.
Chin chin. Yes. Let me tell you about bezoars. Word comes from the Persian, padzar. It means counter-poison, antidote, mainly found in the stomachs of goats and gazelles. Once believed to possess mystic powers, they can remedy poison, make the sick well. Edward IV survived the effects of a poisoned wound due solely to a bezoar in his possession. Queen Elizabeth I had a bezoar set in gold with unicorn's horn, given to her by John Dee, her spy and magician. Yes, for the common people, apothecaries would lend out bezoars at extortionate rates for a week or a fortnight.
Will you shut up? I haven't written a word in a year, but nothing I haven't thrown away. Do you know what that's like? When it's just you and this blank sheet of paper and you can't think of a single thing worth saying, a single character that people can believe in, a single story that hasn't been told 1,000 times before.
Of course I know what it's like. Don't be a fool, boy. Let me see my present. Oh, yes, yes. Rapunzel, let down your hairball. A genuine trichinobezoar. The smell comes from the partly digested particles of food trapped in... I'm sorry. I'm lecturing again. An old writer with no one else to talk to gets fond of the sound of his own voice. Come, I will put the bezoar with the rest of them. I suppose that you want her. Now, did you bring any clothes?
Clothes? I didn't know I...
Never mind. I have an old coat you may use.
The stairs are piled on each side with books. The walls bear playbills and posters from years before, all with Fry's name in prominent lettering.
I caught her on Mount Helicon, you know. 1927, Greece. I was 27. She was bathing in the spring, and I caught her and bound her with moly, sorcerer's garlic, as it's sometimes called, and with certain rituals. This way. The hardest part was getting her back to England. They say one ought to woo her kind of thing, but I must say I found the use of force most efficacious. After all, I got the fame and the glory. I created the novels, the poems... The plays. I don't need her anymore, Madoc. And you do. Here she is.
The curtains in the upstairs room are drawn. The room itself is unfurnished, save for an old bedstead with a thin mattress upon which lies a naked woman, not more than 20 years old.
Good God!
The girl looks as if she has been starved for a fortnight. Lit by the single bulb in the hallway outside, the outline of her hip bones and ribs are visible. Her blondish hair is long and unkempt.
Her name is Calliope.
What would you with me now, Erasmus? Am I now to perform for your amusement? Is this man to be our audience?
Don't get yourself all worked up, Calliope. No, this is Richard Madoc. He's a novelist, or at least he's written one extremely successful first novel and has found himself quite unable to write anything else. Richard, this is Calliope.
Hi.
Calliope is one of the nymphs of legend, Richard. Daughters of Zeus. She was the youngest of the 9 muses. Homer's muse, so she ought to be good enough for you. Calliope, I'm giving you to Richard. You're his now.
But you said... You told me, you promised that you would free me before you died. You said I could have my freedom.
Put not your trust in princes, my dear. Nor in an aging author who has never been what one might call a shining example when it came to keeping his word. Writers are liars, my dear. Surely you have realized that by now.
Here, put this coat on. There, that's better. I ought to have brought her some shoes.
She's a goddess, she doesn't need them. Now take the little cow away, Madoc. I never want to see either of you again. However, if you ever happen to feel a spark of gratitude, you might want to persuade some publisher to bring Here Comes a Candle back into print. I was particularly proud of that one.
And Madoc took Calliope back to his home and locked her in the topmost room which he had prepared for her. His first action was to rape her, nervously, on the musty old camp bed he had installed. She's not even human, he told himself. She's thousands of years old. But her flesh was warm, and her breath was sweet, and she choked back tears like a child whenever he hurt her.
Have you had satisfaction?
Do you care?
It occurred to him, momentarily, that the old man might have cheated him, given him a real girl, that he, Rick Madoc, might possibly have done something wrong, even criminal. But afterwards, relaxing in his study, something shifted inside his head.
God. Yes. Yes.
He switched on the word processor to write it down before it fled.
Yes.
Chapter 3. And some in velvet gowns.
Your face, he said to her. What have you done to your face?
Marion shrugged.
I wanted to look on the outside, like I do on the inside, she said simply, not putting down the knife.
He had been writing for 3 hours before he surfaced enough to realize that he had begun his second novel.
Oh, man, this is great.
Up in Madoc's attic room, with the window locked and barred and the door bolted from the outside, Calliope has risen and put back on the old coat she arrived in. She kneels on the bare floorboards, her hands clasped in prayer.
Gracious ladies, mother of the Kameni,
Hear my prayer. Melete, Nimi, Ioide, attend my supplication. It is I, your daughter Calliope, who calls you as I have called you 1,000 times. I implore you, ladies, deliver me from this place and this time. To whom can I speak in my grief? I, who am late.